From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of April 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. We'll talk about the number of days it takes to plant a corn crop across the United States and how that has changed or not from the early 1990s. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the agricultural cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County and discuss the agricultural weather forecast, too. Open days this week, mostly, says John Davis, but next week could be troublesome. We'll hear all about that during this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for a Monday afternoon. Kurt Kimmel is here. He's from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
So it's unusual, or at least fairly unusual, for corn to be higher and for soybeans to be lower. What happened today?
Well, I think it's some spread unwinding. They've been fairly popular. Did the spread activity. We saw some buying corn, selling beans, and even though Chicago wheat in the low white wheat purchasing and seeing the corn purchase against the beans, of course. Fundamentally, maybe a little concern about corn acres for same. Even though we still have some time to get the corn crop in the ground. Corn shipments were fairly good. We were at the upper end of expectations on it, so corn sales are staying robust. So the corn fundamental supply-demand balance sheet still looks fairly good when you put a trend line yield on it and keep demand fairly robust. Whereas if we pick up some more bean acres and bean sales have slowed, shipments were at the lower end of expectations, and we're just not seeing any new export sales here as a whole for the last week and a half. So the concern is that Asia will continue to shop at the southern hemisphere here over the near term. So that was probably the fundamental spin here today, why corn was supportive versus the beans. This afternoon's planting progress reports expected to show corn as a nation, 7% complete versus 3% last week. Average is probably about 12 to 15% for this time of year. Beans about 2% in the ground. Spring wheat about 7%. And winter wheat conditions are expected to improve 1% up to 32%. Also, too, when you look at beans, we're seeing beans go in the ground before corn in some areas. So I don't know if we're going to get in a situation where bean plantings could remain strong. And if these early beans come reality and we see bigger bean yields, that that could add to the bottom line here on the carryout estimate as we move into next winter. So that's a kind of a long-term situation, but producers are fairly well sold on let's get these beans in, and some guys even shoot for 100 bushel bean yield. So it'd be interesting to see how that unfolds here as we go through the growing season, Todd.
You mentioned the spreads. Do we know whether it was commercials or funds that were unwinding the spreads at this time?
It was mainly commodity fund activity that showed up from what we saw thus far. The funds seem to have the ability to push the market kind of back and forth and through here. Commercial-wise, it seems like basis and beans still remain somewhat wide, indicating strong ownership of bean inventory that's hedged and kind of sitting and waiting for that basis to narrow up as we move through the marketing year.
Have you talked to enough farmers? Do you know, I'm sure they got started in the field over the weekend. Have they had to slow down simply because they're running out of field conditions that are good enough to go?
It's been pick and choose. One producer is 40% planted, but he just around in that assumption area. But the thing is, he had some good ground that's tiled, but neighbors haven't turned a wheel yet. So it's kind of pick and choose as you move over west of Springfield. There's some guys 25% complete. But it seems like Bloomington Normal on south, there's some activity. You start getting north of us, there hasn't been a whole lot accomplished. This morning's radar map, of course, showed that southeast a little moist, so it's going to take a little some time from them. As far as you go north, Minnesota and so forth, the snow has moved through the field, off the field, and about the snow you see now is in the ditches. But however, the ground's still kind of hard, so with that snow melt taking place, it's mainly going to have to run off right now until that frost line disappears, so the ground can soak up some moisture or send it down through the tiles.
We'll hear a bit later, I think, that those areas to the north, parts of Iowa, Minnesota, the Dakotas, while they'll burn off the snow this week, I'm more likely to get wet next week. That may push them into some pretty light time frames. Have you thought very much about prevent plant acres and what that'll look like maybe in the coming months? Or do we need to keep an eye on it, I suppose, is really the bottom line question.
Well, that's the thing to watch here, and that's probably something to watch on harvested acres here on this May 10th report. I think it's a little early to make that assumption right now. I think it would probably be a switch to beans or sunflowers or sorghum in some areas versus prevent plant right at the moment, but that's where the harvested acres come into. But yeah, we have another system coming in next week, May 1st through the 4th. The weather guys have got that fairly well nailed as a concern, especially you know, if you're trying to get some field work accomplished. But my weather source of 226 years of experience, you know, projects May here to be showery activity throughout the whole month. Then as we move into midsummer, it could be a whole total new picture.
You pay quite a bit for that weather source, don't you?
It was $7.50, I think.
The good old farmer's almanac. I love it. Hey, thank you so much. We'll talk with you again soon, Kurt.
All right, take care, Todd. Thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye. Now, that, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with trade and NAFTA. Negotiators from the United States, Mexico, and Canada are still pushing to have a comprehensive new North American Free Trade Agreement soon. Negotiating teams from each of the nations have been meeting regularly in hopes of a breakthrough. For his part, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer has appeared confident in the meetings he's had with lawmakers and Trump administration officials that he'll be able to reach a preliminary NAFTA in the next couple of weeks. That would put the target date of around May 4th to have an agreement in principle worked out. The goal, Lighthizer and other U.S. officials have said, is to have a deal approved before Congress recesses for the December holidays, which is supposed to be December 13th. However, Mexico's own legislative period is in a consideration that cannot be dismissed. Any negotiated deal for them must be passed by the Mexican Senate, and that current session ends on the 31st day of August. Up next, a bit more about dicamba, but this one's an interesting twist. Arkansas farmers are taking matters into their own hands over whether they can spray the herbicide dicamba onto crops this growing season and into the future. In late 2017, the Arkansas Plant Board banned use of the herbicide after widespread complaints from farmers that the herbicide drifted from neighboring fields and damaged their crops. Monsanto sought to block that rule from taking effect, but a state judge tossed out the suit based on sovereign immunity grounds, citing an Arkansas Supreme Court ruling that makes it difficult to sue state agencies. But the judge also ruled that six farmers involved in challenging the ban were denied their due process rights because they had no means to get the ban overturned because of the state sovereignty loophole. So the ban would not apply to those particular growers. That's prompted a mass run to the courts. Groups of farmers are seeking the same relief, and some judges have granted temporary restraining orders preventing the plant board from enforcing its regulation. Meanwhile, the state attorney's general office is gathering up those restraining orders and taking them to the state Supreme Court. That ruling is expected to be imminent. That's a quick look at the day's agricultural news. This is the Closing Market Report for Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Scott Irwin. He's an agricultural economist here at the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Last week, you'd written an article about the planting season and number of suitable days it takes to put a crop in the ground. Pretty clearly, we know why you wrote it, because most people are a little fearful at this point that soil temps haven't come up. We've had 3 or 4 snowstorms across the Midwest, 3 in April, and it just seems to be a late start for the year. And equipment's a whole lot bigger. So most people think, hey, we can get this crop in the ground. What'd you find out?
Well, we found some surprising results. We kind of started with an argument that I've seen out there on chat boards and a few people make, that because we have invested so much into, I'll just call them big, sophisticated planters, things like, you know, a lot of 24 and 36 row planters, people see them rolling, and those units clearly can cover a lot more ground than older planters, if you, you know, 6, 8, 12 row machines. That's just obvious. But we wanted to take a look and ask, what's the data on planting progress show about when you look at it from the totality of the Corn Belt? You know, can these fewer big planters allow us to plant the Corn Belt now quicker than we could, say, 25 or 30 or 35 years ago with more medium-sized planters? So that was our motivation.
And you looked, just to be clear, at Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, or the I states. I think that would make things fair, because if you go further out, further afield in Kansas and the Dakotas, they weren't around as much back then. So you've got the three I states, primary corn country, middle of the Corn Belt. Anything that you found in them individually that was interesting?
I think the thing that struck us was how similar the patterns were across the states when you get all done, in terms of our computed number of days that it would take to plant the Corn Belt. When we say that, we use that in a very specific way, that the term that's used is suitable field days. So that's a day you can be in the field, theoretically, 24 hours. And we were looking, based on planting progress, we computed the planting progress in each of those three I states per suitable field day. And then we put that on a total acres basis. And what struck us was how remarkably stable that was, or has been, across those three I states, and then through time for each of the states. Iowa was a bit of a wild card, showed a pretty substantial upward trend through about 2004, and then it fell off dramatically. I don't have a good explanation for that. But the bottom line is, when you get all done with it, it takes 14 really good, suitable field days, with everyone planting at all out at their maximum capacity, historically, to get the Corn Belt planted.
So the suitable field days, and for those who listen to the program regularly, you'll hear on Tuesday afternoons, generally speaking, the weekly crop progress report from Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota. And they do, in the state statisticians' audio and in the reports, give us the number of days that were suitable for field work. I assume that definition is
that's the exact same data we're using. Right. Yes. And so, you know, we wanted to basically answer a question. You know, I looked around and I thought, this is kind of an obvious thing to think about. I was surprised that I couldn't find someone else had already kind of tried to figure this out. And, you know, I think, you know, what is been satisfying to me in the day since we put the article out, Todd, I've got a lot of Twitter responses from all sorts of people, but a number of farmers, and they all go, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, as one person on Twitter put it to me, he said, you know, 30 years ago, we had more medium-sized farmers with smaller planters. Today, we have fewer farmers farming and they do have, on average, much bigger planters. But when you add up the total number of rows that can go through the field, and we still only have 24 hours per day, it's maybe not all that surprising that the number of days that it takes to plant the Corn Belt hasn't changed very much in the last 40 years.
Farmers equal equipment size. So fewer farmers, larger equipment, but length of time to plant the crop still about the same.
Exactly. And you know, as an economist, I find that a really satisfying result. It means that implies that, you know, given the climate and the soils here in the Corn Belt, that we basically size up our planting equipment so that going at our fastest rate, farmers invest so that we can get it done in about 14 good field days. And we basically sized our planter equipment to do that for a long time.
What's next? This is the first in a series of two?
That's right. We'll be putting out an article this week, basically now taking that base data and using it to project how much late planting there might be this year, because it's obvious we're getting off to a very late start throughout most of the corn, in fact, virtually all the Corn Belt. I saw a map that really shocked me, Todd, this morning that was good as of yesterday, showing I was really shocked at what a large area of northern Iowa and southern Minnesota still has snow cover. I'm a native Iowan, so I'm thinking, oh my goodness, that would be hard to accept on this date.
Hey, so if you could give me the number of prevent plant acres in this upcoming article, that would be
good. Okay, well, we'll give it a whirl, Todd.
All right, thanks so much. That, of course, is Scott Irwin. He's an agricultural economist here on the U of I campus in Urbana-Champaign. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for Monday afternoon. John Davis here from Risk Pulse in Chicago. John, farmers in Illinois, Indiana, I would think maybe the lower third of Iowa would like some open weather. Well, farmers everywhere would like some open weather to get planted. Those guys might be able to roll. Tell me about this week.
Well, this week is better. I guess in one sense, it couldn't get that much worse than what we saw during the first 3 weeks of this month, one of the worst Aprils of all time. But this week will be better. Warmer temperatures, mainly sunny days, generally dry conditions across the vast majority of the Midwest. The only exception is further south, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, Ohio, and that's in the next couple of days. But other than that, the remainder of the belt and the majority of the Midwest is on the dry side.
So we need to keep the planters rolling pretty quickly if we're going to make up some time. And we haven't lost a lot, but we do have to make some time up. That means next week's going to need to be good, too. What do you think there?
Not as good. And so after generally dry weather and warmer temperatures this week, next week looks much more unsettled. So as we go into the first 4 or 5 days of May, the pattern looks more active. And some of the heavier rains that have been kind of draped across places like the Delta acreage and the southern U.S., those will be easing back northward over the Midwest. So next week, as we go into early May, it looks more active. The vast majority of the Midwest gets back into rains, cloudy conditions, a little bit cooler, nothing cold like what we were at, but certainly not above normal for this time of year. So a lot of it's going to come down to how well we do this week and how much progress that we make, because next week does not look as good.
So overall, I think if we could get maybe 3 to 4 suitable days a week to get things planted, that would be useful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that happening, or are the rainfall amounts just too much, and will we be out for the duration next week? How do you see it all unfolding?
Well, whereas this week we do get that 3 to 4 days of open weather. Next week, now it's the opposite. You'll have 3 or 4 days of rainy and kind of cloudy conditions across the belt. And so just a couple of days of open weather. So, you know, this is the best week you're going to have, it looks like, into the first week or 10 days of May. So again, so much of it comes down to what can you get accomplished this week? Because things next week look like the majority of the Midwest will go back into, you know, kind of a pattern that features cloudy skies, rainy conditions, and pretty poor field work.
normal westerlies controlling our weather at this time?
They really are. Yeah, normal westerlies, and as those westerlies ease northward, that's why we're going to get wetter next week compared to this week. So this week, the westerlies in the main storm track is in the deep south. Delta gets really good rains this week. Next week, that moves northward right over the Midwest and the northern plains.
All right. Hey. Oh, and the northern plains, so they'll get rain. But they're cold still, so they're delayed again another week after this, aren't they?
They are. They are melting their snow, which is, you know, they had a lot of snow even a week ago. They are melting their snow. They're getting a little bit warmer, but they have a long ways to go before they really make any fieldwork operations or any kind of fieldwork prep across the region. And again, that's another reason why the rains next week are an item of concern for that area as well.
John Davis, of course, is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago.